Welcome to Car Freak Conversations. I'm Dom.
And I'm Sumitra.
And today, it sounds like we're going to be talking about Lime Bike, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that's a great conversation.
Before we get into it, we'd like to start out with sort of like something more casual. And we want to ask, what's your favorite thing about St. Pete? I don't know how much time you spent here, but do you have any favorite spots?
Well, I will tell you, I've attended a wedding many, many years ago, and I was at the museum downtown, and I will tell you, it was one of the most beautiful venues I have been to for a wedding. So I will tell you, that was one of my first experiences in St. Pete, so it really kind of set the bar. But I'm from Southwest Florida, so I live there, so I'm very familiar with the area, and I have spent some time up there, a couple times on some soccer fields, at least once more recently with my kids. St. Pete's beautiful. I mean, wasn't it voted the sunniest city in Florida? So there's nothing wrong with that.
You were at the MFA, the Museum of Fine Arts.
I was.
Yeah, it is a beautiful venue. Yeah. They host lots of different events apart from weddings, and like they're always like really beautiful.
They do a good job. They do.
It was like 10 years ago, so I don't want to date myself, but it was beautiful. It was one of my college friends' weddings, and I got to bring my daughter on her first plane ride because I wasn't living in Florida at the time. So that was a really, it was a really great experience to have the first plane ride, and then we went to a wedding. It was just absolutely stunning.
That's awesome. I'm glad you had a good experience. It always makes you feel good.
Yeah, I actually, every city I get the honor and privilege to go to, I find find some fun, find some beauty, hopefully a little bit of culture too.
Good.
And St. Pete has also changed so much in the past 10 years.
It has changed a lot.
Yeah, I moved here in 2017 to the area, and even I can notice like lots of changes as I have lived here. And so I can only imagine like for people who have always lived here and people who haven't visited in a while, that how much it has changed.
Yeah, if you come back, you'll be in for a surprise.
I was there recently when we deployed. So I got to see the city. I didn't get to see it as much. And I've driven through it quite a bit as well. That airport has had my name on it a couple times. But we spend, you know, I've got quite a few different cities that we have in the state of Florida. So I get to see. And what's even better is we get to work with great partners like the city to build programs that are both sustainable and something that can drive a kind of more car-free environment, which I know the city is just pushing towards.
Well, that's a good segue. Tell us about Lime and what attracted you to work for Lime. So it's a micro mobility ride share company, right?
Yeah. So we do micro mobility. I will tell you, I've worked in many different sectors. So I've worked in nonprofit. I've worked in government. I've worked in philanthropy. I've kind of done that little gamut of, wanting to kind of be a part of something that was bigger than me. I will say I was excited about this opportunity because I understand deeply now over some experience that transportation tends to be a burden and it can create a burden for people to get to the next step, whether that be a mom who wants to get to the doctor's office for a prenatal visit or an individual who's working who doesn't have reliable transportation. So I loved what micromobility, has to offer when it comes to an urban city. The ability for somebody who may not have the ability to have a car or doesn't want to use a car or maybe doesn't necessarily need to buy a personal device. So rideshare is a great option. I just think it has so many abilities to move communities forward into this kind of new frontier of world that we're looking at, which is trying to really kind of reduce our carbon footprint. So I was really excited about the opportunity. And honestly, I just came because I thought, hey, this is a great opportunity. And I do think micromobility has this unique opportunity in history to really kind of transform communities and their transportation.
That's amazing. So Lime operates in 250 cities across 30 countries. And like you have said, you have worked with other cities in Florida. What, in your opinion, or in your experience, made St. Pete, working with the city of St. Pete, like different or unique?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think what's great about St. Pete is that number one, it's a city that wants to partner with micromobility and bike share program. It's always great when we're working within cities that we're really kind of communicating and building a program together. We believe in collaboration. We do not believe in one size fits all. So we really like to listen. We like to pay attention to what the community wants, what the city wants, and help bring our abilities to the city to kind of help design and walk alongside in their transportation needs, especially when it comes to micromobility. So for me, I think, you know, I've had the opportunity since, you know, May to work with the city. And first of all, the people that we've worked with have just been just great to work with, ask a lot of questions and are trying to learn about what we can kind of do together. So building that program, that bike share program together is just really key.
How do you decide which cities you're going to partner with?
Well, there's a lot of different ways in which that happens. Some cities come to us asking for micromobility programs. Sometimes there's a procurement process involved. But for us, when we're looking at cities, obviously we're looking for cities that are looking at micromobility as a real fabric of transportation. Not just a one-off. We want to become the fabric of the transportation and infrastructure system that is created. So for us, when we see a city like St. Pete, who's, you know, gotten some really good buzz in the media about being a forward-thinking micro and looking at micromobility, you know, it's a great city. So we were very excited, when we got the opportunity to come work with the city.
Cool. Very cool. So another question I have for you is, well, first, I guess let's break it down. Let's talk about Lime Bike and how it works, right? So the idea of Lime Bike is it's a bike sharing program. We have hubs throughout the city. You go up to a bike, you use your phone, and you unlock the bike for a certain amount of time, and you return it to another hub. Right.
Yeah.
That's the basics of it. I mean,
you got it. I don't need to say anything. You nailed it.
Right. So that's the idea behind it. Right. And so Now I want to talk about who is this for, who can access this, and how have we made it affordable for people to use?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question. And I'm so glad you're an expert in Lime bikes. So that gets to help. Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, I think micromobility in general kind of suits the needs of the community at large. So I know St. Pete has a lot of tourism that takes place, right? So we obviously have it available for when people come in and they don't have cars, like they would, you know, maybe move with Uber, right? Like a transportation. It's there for that. It's also there for commuters, right? So people who are trying to move to go to a job. We operate 24 hours, which makes it even better for people who might not have a traditional 9-to-5 job, but work different shifts, right? So maybe they don't have a car and they have the ability. So we suit that need as well. We also do have a discounted program, which is our Lime Access program. And that is anybody who's, you'd have to look at it online, but essentially anybody who's kind of has like a public assistance of some sort. They can go online, easily upload a document, put a little bit of information in. And then once it's uploaded, very shortly after, they would potentially get signed up and get the ability to get the discounted price. You just do need to have an account set up at first. But there's that. And we also have some zones where there's reduced prices if you start your Lime Bike in those zones. Again, trying to make that affordable and trying to make that equitable for everybody to try to be able to use these devices.
Yeah, I did read about the affordability program, and sometimes users can get up to 70% discount on their rides, which is really helpful, especially if you're trying to get new registrations and, you know, you're trying to get people who may not live in a bustling area to get a ride. I think that's a great way to incentivize someone to use the Lime Bikes for sure.
Yeah. And we're in conversations with some organizations in the city to kind of see if there's ways that they might be able to kind of talk about the program, things like this, right? Because we do know that trusted organizations are always a great venue and a vessel to try to get people more signed up. But we'll continue to advertise and try to get more people signed up for that program, as we do in many and much of our other markets as well, because it's also for the other markets.
How are you getting new registrations? Like, are you, you know, how are you getting people to register their account, get a new account if they don't have one?
For the Lyme Access or generally just a Lyme app?
Just a Lyme app.
Yeah. So we, right off the bat, put up some hang tags, did some promotions. We've done some press. It takes a little while, and the scalability of people getting used to them, getting on them. So it is very normal for there to be kind of a scaling period of individuals going on the devices, but we'll continue to, you know, they self-market themselves sitting around and in parking hubs, number one, which is, you know, a good advertisement for that. But two, the more we're involved in some of the community stuff, people will see us. And I think it'll, you know, we've had another market that I've seen, it just kind of scales up on its own. But yeah, that's, it's pretty easy marketing to some extent.
Okay. I was going to ask, how many bikes do we have so far in St. Pete? And where are the boundaries? Where are these zones?
Yeah, so we've got about 300 deployed right now currently. And it's the whole city. But as you guys know, it's a mandatory parking program, which means that you have to go to and from a parking location. So we're continuing to work with the city on scaling up those parking pins and those parking corrals. And I think that'll continue to kind of move. But we, you know, we like to work alongside with the cities to kind of show where we see some, you know, high frequency areas, give some recommendations, and try to use informed decision making when we're helping design that. But yeah, no, we're scaling up.
I wanted to ask about, you know, we have the Pinellas Trail. So this is basically a bike trail that goes east to west through the city. Can e-bikes used on the Pinellas Trail? And if so, can the e-assist be turned off as a courtesy to some people on the on that path? I've spoken with cyclists who get a little frustrated with some of the motorized vehicles on that path. So I thought I'd ask for those people.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. The answer is, to the best of my ability, I think we're able to go on all of it as of right now. And then as it relates to turning off the assist, we market towards individuals who want to use the electric bikes. And we continue to believe, you know, we've seen it in many of our markets, that these things are needed and wanted. I think there's a vessel for everybody, in their opinion. We are bike share. We are regulated. So the Lyme scooters are regulated. And we take our heed from the city. So, you know, we're not turning off the e-assist on ours as because it's an assist program. I'm going to tell you, as somebody who lives in Florida and might not be a competitive or a regular biker, although I do bike, it gets hot. So these e-assists are for a good reason. And if you get on them, you know, it kind of gives you that, like, you know, luxury feel of, you know, relax. You don't have to pedal as hard. You can go a little bit further. So there's a need. So I hope that answers your question.
And I think the speed is also regulated on Pinellas Trail, although, like, enforcement is questionable. But I think that's another way of also looking at it, because the bikes can only go up to 15 miles per hour.
Yeah, we're regulated. And here's the thing. There's a lot of personal, you know, personal micromobility devices as well. But, you know, the thing with bike share is we are, and or micromobility, we are regulated by cities on what we can and cannot do.
Do you know if you can take one of the e-bikes on like one of the buses, on one of the city buses or the Sunrunner?
Yeah. So that's an interesting question. I think I, you know, I don't know this answer 100%. I'm going to be honest with you. And I think I'd have to really kind of reach out to the city on this one, because, they are personal devices. They're owned by us. So I'm not sure about that. I can't say that somebody hasn't done it. But I'm not sure if that's something that we necessarily want to promote, for a variety of reasons, but I don't necessarily know if that's what we're intended to do, because we're really intended to do that last mile, first mile solution. So if there's a parking pin or a corral right near a bus transit system, that would be best, right? So that, they can get off, then they can take it right there, and then they go to a different bus transit, and then they get on and get another one. Because what we're segmented to do is last mile, first mile. And the e-bikes essentially even get a little bit longer than traditional like e-scooters, right? E-scooters can probably go as far, but if you're going on an e-bike, we do see the e-bikes can get a lot more distance out of them just because it's a bike. But yeah, I mean, for us, it's the last mile, first mile solution. So that would be more of what we're really working towards. If that, it's different. You know, we want to make sure we got those hubs so that people can get on, get off, and get that, you know, they get to their bus and then they want to get home.
Right. Plus you run the risk of getting off of the bus and then you can't find
a car.
And there, and that's the other thing. That is the other thing to note. Yeah. So we do, it's mandatory parking. So you want to make sure, and that's another reason why I wouldn't necessarily say that's a great idea. There's a variety of reasons I would hesitate against that, including probably some legal stuff. But I think the goal here, you know, is really to make sure that we're there at those hubs and work with the city, right? If that's something that, you know, the city sees or constituents are talking about, we'd like to be a part of that conversation with the city about where those are, those locations. And we actually have, which I think you'll ask me about, but we have participated in some of the city input. So, which is an exciting opportunity.
It will tell us a little bit about that, about the expansion of Lime stations and the expansion of your fleet size as well. What are the plans there, and how do you work with the city? I know Sumitra and I participated in a little charrette where we were talking about where the new hubs would go. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so we're permitted to go up to 500 e-bikes with the city, but we're at 300. And honestly, we work in about 230 plus cities, give or take, depending. And we've learned quite a bit, honestly, when it comes to building and supporting the infrastructure. So here's what I will tell you. If it's a mandatory parking, right, compliance matters to us. It matters to the city. The city's really looking for that aesthetically pleasing approach to this e-bike program. So the mandatory parking and parking pins are there for a reason. So for us, you don't want people just leaving them by accident that aren't in the corrals. So we need to have enough corrals in place to be able to reach that compliance, to get exactly what the city wants, or at least we believe the city is looking for in our program. So I do foresee the more hubs that we get, the more that scalability can continue to go up. But we're always very aware that there's that aesthetically pleasing as well as that approach that they want to have of mandatory parking. So we will continue to, you know, scale. And that includes getting more parking locations so that people can get to and from, because people, if they're riding these, want to be able to go to and from the location. So the more hubs we have, the better, right? Because that means if you want to go down to the library or you want to go to your favorite coffee shop, you want to get as close to that as possible. And we want to be there to try to kind of guide and help.
When can, I know it's pretty new that we got Lime bikes, but when can people look forward to seeing perhaps more corrals in there, you know, closer to their home or further south, for example?
Yeah. So we're working with the conversations with the city are ongoing. I think everybody's really sees that, and it's something we bring from Lime with our expertise to talk about. So I do foresee, you know, that continuing to scale. Timelines I don't want to give because I don't have the liberty to give those, unfortunately. But I can tell you that we are in conversations with the city about that. We will continue to have conversations. It'll be one of the main talking points that I have all the time, which is we want beautiful compliance and we want the ability for people to use these. And the way that they use them is when it is easy to get one and easy to get to where you want to go. So those mandatory parking locations, because it's a mandatory program, are essential to the success. So we'll continue to work with the city.
And I think going back to the question about if we can take them on the buses, I think one of the other hesitations that I would have is that if I'm changing the municipal borders, I know Lime is only in St. Pete. If I'm going to, let's say, St. Pete Beach or to Pinellas Park, suddenly I'm not in St. Pete anymore and the bike will stop working. If I'm doing that. So,
and it's one of the reasons why I heated a little bit, because I'm like, I legally don't think that is what it's supposed to be, but I'm not a lawyer and I would have to make sure I heat that a little bit more. But yeah, I, uh, And it's not part of like what we're trying to do. It's not a part of the fabric of our transportation, right? I think if you have a personal bike, it makes sense, right? But for us, we're contracted in within the city limits. We're contracted to be able to provide that service for that obviously sustainable electric bike, right? And it that last mile, first mile is something that we just, I mean, that's the foundation of micromobility, right? So, and we stay there in a good lane, but we continue to get feedback from cities. And we get questions, you know, that sometimes we have to really think about and see how we can, you know, work through those. But yeah, that's another reason why I was like, yeah, I wouldn't recommend that.
I have one last question before we wrap up. And that is with pricing, right? So I know it's a you pay as you use it sort of service. But let's say I wanted to use it regularly as a commuter. Do you or do you plan to have any sort of like memberships?
Yeah. So right now we've got a Lime Prime that gives a $1 off your unlock fee. I think that's $5.99 a month. $5.99, by the way. $5.99. So that's one of our bigger membership programs. I think we also have a 300-minute a month program for I think it's $14.99. $14.99 a month. I think it is. I'll have to look at the details. Don't quote me on that one. But we do have passes that are available. And if you go into the app, and I apologize, they're a little different from each one of the cities. But if you go into the app, it'll actually show you kind of programs that you can have. So you go right into the app and you can look for the different types of passes and you can purchase them. I think there's a monthly one for that 300 minutes. So we try to make sure that it meets the needs of many different people. Like we talked about tourism that plays a large part in a lot of economics for many cities, as well as the commuters, which are extremely important. Those individuals who are actually in the city and can use that as a form of transportation. So we try to look at it that way as well. But I can send over that pass information too, because now I know I got it wrong. I apologize.
Well, it's good to know that they exist, right? Yeah.
No, it does. And then as soon as I said, I was like, so.
Are there any plans to integrate them with like a local transit pass or any of that?
Yeah. So right now we are actually integrate with Uber. So if you open up your Uber app right now, if you're in St. Pete, you can see the little Lime bike that shows up as an option as well. We also have, we have had conversations with some of the local municipality as well as the county. And we'll continue to have conversations about integration. It's a big discussion around the board. I think integration is what everyone's looking for. And we continue to have conversations and figuring out how we can be a deeper fabric of the transportation system.
For sure. You know, whenever I travel, if I have like a transit card on me, now you can have them on your phone. And now your phone becomes your tap to like get onto it as opposed to having to use a card to like tap, which has been amazing. And it's like, okay, this is needed. And I didn't know before I used it.
Yeah. I think the best part about, you know, micromobility is it is in general, it's a younger thing. I think 5-6 years, depending on who you ask. But there's been a lot of changes in micromobility, and bike share in general. You know, there's an evolution that goes on, right? And we're continuing to learn and be informed. But, you know, Lime has done a great job, had a great year last year. Profitability was something that we reached, which is very exciting for us. And we continue to, you know, lead in this space and learn and innovate. And that's something we continue to do. And honestly, the partnerships with the cities that we get is something we value most. And we value that as part of our success as a micromobility company.
Well, thank you. This has been a lot of information. Do we have time to do our lightning round? All right.
I was really hoping you were going to ask for like, what's 25 things inside my bag right now? You know, that's what I was
Some questions like that.
I don't know if I want to open that topic.
I just felt like this is like that one, like Us Weekly thing, you know, when I was a kid, that was like the one thing, you know, they showed all the items in there.
There's that Zoom game now where they randomly ask the Zoom participants to show you what's inside your fridge, which is terribly embarrassing. I would never do that to somebody.
Oh boy.
Imagine showing your fridge right now.
There's a lot of lettuce. There's a lot of lettuce in my fridge right now.
That's good. Even what I can say about my fridge. My fridge just is probably needs to be cleaned.
If it just means I'm not eating as enough lettuce as I'm getting through
it's rotting lettuce.
I need more revealing.
I did have to throw out a bunch of spring greens because I intended to make lots of salads and I did not end up making those salads. I ended up buying those salads outside. So I was like, this is wasteful. But yeah. Well,
for the record of your podcast, I ate a salad today. I just want to make sure that's noted.
Thank you for clarifying. Before you go, we wanted to do something a little fun before you go. And we have something that we like to call a lightning round. And this is just a fun sort of like little sort of Jeopardy round before you go. They're intended to be very quick answers. So the first thing that comes to mind. All right, you ready? And so the topic, the theme for these 10 questions is all about micromobility.
Oh, goodness.
But don't worry, these are not questions that you should know. They're just kind of random facts. So
So the first question is, the term micromobility was coined in 2017, true or false?
I'm sorry, you got to say that one more time. I didn't hear it. If I'm going to answer these, I got to make sure I know what I'm asking.
The term micromobility was first coined in 2017, true or false?
I would say true.
It is true. Yeah.
Pretty new term.
Yeah.
And by the way, for the record, I started micromobility in May 31st of 2022. So I'm learning.
That's amazing. That's, well, congratulations on 1 year of like.
Yeah.
All right. Lime bikes are green. So for everyone listening, you know what color they are when you see bicycles on the at the hubs. One of Lime's competitors is Bird. What color are their e-bikes?
Black.
They're light blue.
They have black as well.
From what I saw light blue. Okay, so they're also black. Okay.
There's blue. No, that's blue's right. Blue's right.
A one wheel can reach speeds of up to 20 mph.
What? I'm sorry, one more time.
A one wheel can reach speeds of up to 20 mph.
I'm sure they can, but I think they're probably required by the city to be less and be at 15 miles an hour.
You're correct.
Yeah. Okay, see?
20 miles per hour is pretty fast.
It's really fast for a one wheel.
Yeah, also their website advertises that you do not need a helmet. I'm like, 20 miles per hour without a helmet sounds dangerous. Like,
always highly recommend everybody to wear a helmet on any of the micromobility devices. But some of the personal devices they've got speed. I mean, that's not something that is, I mean, you can look anywhere. But the thing about micromobility in general is that we are regulated by speed. So that's how I knew it was possible they could probably go faster, but I'm sure they're regulated to a certain speed.
All right. This question I came up with, I'm very excited about this. So in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, no.
Leonardo is known for riding a scooter. Donatello, a bicycle, and Raphael, a pair of rollerblades. Michelangelo is known for mastering which micromobility vehicle?
So can it be any, I don't know this, but I'm going to do an educated guess. Yes. So can it be one of the other three, or does it have to be something different than the other ones?
Well, I'll give you a clue. It could be, but it's not. It's different than what, something else that I've met that I haven't mentioned.
A seated scooter?
No.
What did I miss?
It's a skateboard. I should have told you. It's like the 90s.
But I didn't think that was going to be. I almost said skateboard, by the way. I want to go on record. Traditional electric version of micromobility. And I guess, oh, God, that one's going to haunt me.
So this is a true or false question. There are now more e-bicycles than traditional bicycles in the United States.
One more time. I'm sorry. I'm rolling in my head.
there are now more e-bicycles than traditional bicycles in the United States.
Oh, I don't think so.
You're correct. It's false, but there are currently 15% of all bicycle sales are e-bikes, which is a pretty great number. Pretty big number.
Yeah, those sales are going up. Correct. Yeah, but that would have been a big miss. But every household had a traditional bike in there. You know, it had to be.
The first true motorized bicycle was the Michaud Perrault steam-powered Velocipede in 1868.
Is that a true or false?
True or false?
Boy, you guys are tough. No, I mean, I want to go. It just seems so specific that it has to be true. But then I was told that when people throw too many specifics, then it's a
wow. You're really going to the psychology of this.
Well, I mean, you know, you got to try. I'm going to go with true just because it just seems fun.
It is true. Yeah.
Hey.
I feel like we should have kept that name, Velocipede.
Right. I think so. We didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that would have been a good one. These are really good, by the way. Well done.
This is another true or false question. The first commercially available inline skates were released by Rollerblade in 1987.
It's got to be earlier than that. Rollerblades, I mean, I want to date myself and tell you how old I am, so I figure false?
It's actually true.
I would have thought that was a little bit earlier.
The Italian designed, well, I read that they inline skates were invented earlier, but they were not available to purchase.
Interesting.
They were like invented earlier, but they weren't like available commercially.
Can I take a half point there? Can I negotiate a half point?
Yeah, half a point.
The competitiveness in me.
The Italian designed moped, Piaggio's Vespa, was created with spare aircraft parts from World War II. True or false?
Oh, man. I don't know. True?
It is true. Yeah, it is true.
Again, it's a really specific question.
It is. Yeah, maybe we should make it more vague.
Anyway, I was going to go somewhere, but I was like,
no. For the future people on this podcast, I think you should do exactly what you're doing because my strategy is working. If it's too specific, I think.
Because of its step and frame design, the Vespa became available to what two untapped demographics?
No. Be a little bit more specific for me on like, what are we looking for?
I feel like whenever people design things, pre 1950s, they were marketed to one specific demographic of our society.
Younger people, are we talking? Do I have to give a specific or?
Yeah, it's pretty general.
Yeah, it's pretty general.
I don't know. I'm going to go with I don't know, and I'll take the negative on this one.
It was women and priests.
Women and priests.
Yeah, because of the modesty of not having to like raise your leg over.
A bar.
Well, I learned something new.
Name the country. This is the last one. Name the country that has the highest motorized bicycle scooter usage. And we're talking gas, electric, all of that.
France.
Thailand.
Is it?
Capita, right? I'm assuming.
Okay. I don't know. The highest motorized bicycle scooter usage.
Thailand. You know what? I can see that. I got that. Yeah. I feel like I learned. I got it.
Well, I hope you had fun.
Yes.
Thank you for coming on to Car Free St. Pete. Thank you for talking to us about Lime Bike. I'm really excited about the program. I think it's going to be a huge success here in St. Pete. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of the corrals, more bikes around. For sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we really needed like a robust program that was integrated into like the current transportation that we have in the city.
Yeah.
And so I think having that is really helpful for sure. Thank you so much for providing all that information as well.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks. I always look forward to having conversations because I think it's the best way to talk about a subject matter in general. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to us. And those questions were fabulous, by the way. So well done on your research. And feel free to invite us anytime again if you need us on. But thank you for giving us the opportunity, and I hope you guys have a good evening.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Car Free Conversations.
Please follow us on social media. We are Car Free St. Pete on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.